to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to a very special edition of Shoot the Defence. And the reason why it's special is not just because I'm doing this in the car, it's because I've got Mr. Dan DeLuca, famous from Sofa Sports News, joining me on this Champions League final edition. Mate, how you doing?
In yourself?
How you doing? You good?
I'm doing good. A lot more comfortable than I saw you about 3 hours ago.
Oh, mate, that was some eventful scenario, wasn't it? I mean, it's the first time that you and I have ever met. It was in the middle of a bunch of Juventus fans singing, and you recognised me before I recognised you, which I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing on me.
I think it's your profile still. It's up through the roof these days.
Ah, yes. I'm famous as a post-it note. There you go. That's my infamy. Anyway, mate, let's talk about this Champions League final, because the first 10-15 minutes, Juventus were on the front foot. It didn't look like Real Madrid were going to get into the game, but, you know, goal out of nothing from Ronaldo, gave him half a chance, a very uncharacteristic mistake at the back by the Juve defenders, and it was game on. But then Mandzukic obviously scored a worldie, and it just went downhill from there. What's your take on the game?
Well, I think, obviously, I'm gutted for Juventus, first of all, and obviously Gianluigi Buffon, like the rest of the footballing community, would have wanted to see him win. And to lose two European finals in 3 years is tough. It was a game of two halves, wasn't it? I think Juventus caught Real Madrid completely by surprise. It was billed as attack versus defence, except Juventus didn't really come out to defend. They started to take the game to Real Madrid. Real Madrid were lucky to go in level, and I think it just gave them a foothold to make some changes in the second half. You saw a lot more aggression from the Real Madrid fullbacks in particular in the second half. A lot will be made of the age of Juventus players. I don't really buy that necessarily, because that's not the youngest Real Madrid squad I've ever seen. You've got Modric and Ramos over 30. Ronaldo, obviously, I mean, he's still as fit as when he was 21. But I just think, as Real Madrid pushed into the game, they got their deflected goal. They score straight after that. And I think when you feel like things are going against you, them old legs, they start to get heavier and heavier and heavier. And in the end, it was almost a non-event the second half, which was a shame because Juventus showed so much promise in that first half there.
No, I agree. I mean, I said first 10-15 minutes, it was all Juventus. And what I noticed Allegri doing, and I haven't been watching much of Juventus in Serie A, to be fair, so I don't know if this is what he was doing. But I noticed that when Juventus were going forward, they played with a 3-4-2-1. So you'd have Dybala and Mandzukic off Higuain. Well, when they were defending, it was just a flat 4-4-2 with Dani Alves wide right. And to be honest, I think Dani Alves was Juventus' best player throughout the 90 minutes. You know, he was bombing forward. It was the Dani Alves we saw at Barcelona. But at the same time, I was very disappointed with players like Dybala and Higuain. And I text you at the end of the game saying, well, is there a bigger big game bottler than Higuain? Is there, mate? Because, as you mentioned, 2014 World Cup final, he fluffed his lines there. I haven't seen him pull it off in the big games and the ones that matter.
Yeah, and that unfortunately is a tag that still hangs around his neck, and tonight's going to do nothing to ease that. He wasn't really in the game at all beyond the first 5 minutes, where he had a couple of headers, he was trying to get involved. I don't think it's not the system. It was more the game went didn't tend to help him in this instance. But I think he's had enough cracks at big games for me not to make excuses for him. But what I was disappointed with was, look, watching Italian football over the years, the one thing you get from Italian football is calm, patience, and a sense of they're not going to panic. Now what happens, they're going to try and play their way back into the game. And I saw Juventus reduced to becoming a long ball team, whereby the reason they reverted to that tactic, I think they felt that was the only way they were going to pass the Real Madrid midfield, where Luka Modric was unbelievable again. Toni Kroos and him together were running the show. They allowed Isco lots of space in the pocket. And I think Juventus got to a point in that second half where they really did run out of ideas, by which point they're lumping balls up to Higuain, they're bouncing off of him. So, I mean, he was disappointing anyway, but Juventus, back to your point about the three at the back and switching, that was clear that was a tactic, and they almost built their game around Dani Alves, which was interesting. And on the flip side to that, you had Bazzagli doing a similar job on the other side, where Alexandro bombed forward, you had Bazzagli tucking back in.
Yep.
And I think too often in that second half particularly, the back three, which is what Juventus' tactics were built around, were pulled away from where they needed to be, and they were just a little bit slower than you'd normally expect.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what lost them the game. The speed at which they moved the ball compared to Madrid and the speed at which they reacted. All right, there's a couple of deflected goals in there, but, I mean, it's hard to make a case for Juventus based on a second half that they were going to do anything apart from lose that game in the end.
Yeah, and it's sad because I remember them a couple of years ago against Barcelona, and Barcelona were a juggernaut then. You know, they called MSN, you know, those three strikers, Messi, Suarez and Neymar, they, how many goals did they get? Between 110, 120? It was something ridiculous like that. And, you know, again, Juventus turned up. We thought, oh, you know, because it was the anniversary of Heysel and whatnot, that they would, you know, get a result. And, you know, even when Morata equalised, we thought, well, hang about it, they might nick something, but then they just capitulated. And the same thing happened tonight, although it was kind of like the other way around, where they went behind and then they equalised and then it just went downhill. What next for Allegri then? Because he's led them to two finals. They lost in both finals. I was thinking about it after the game in the sense that, well, Barcelona have got a new manager. Arsenal have obviously retained their manager for another two seasons. I can't see him leaving Juventus. So what do you think is next on his agenda? Is he going to change the system somewhat? Is he going to bring in younger players? Or is he going to buy players that are quicker on the ball?
It's interesting because, yeah, like you mentioned, that there really is nowhere for him to go this summer. He's one of those where, you know, you're in between international tournaments, so there's not going to be an international vacancy. It's one of those things in Italy that does tend to happen is the top managers do have a stint at the national job, which happens a lot less over here. So that's not available to him. Obviously, Chelsea's manager isn't going anywhere. The Barcelona managerial post is going to be wrapped up, and I don't think he's the style that Barcelona would want. So he is going to be at Juventus next year. There's no Italian club for him to go to. Obviously, Juventus are the runaway, you know, dominant side in Italy. I think that makes it difficult for him because it almost makes it harder when you're winning leagues relentlessly, like Juventus are now, six in a row, which I think is a Serie A record, in the sense that just winning, oh, this year they've won the league and the cup and they've fallen short of the treble, but almost now next season winning the league is an expectation.
Yeah.
It obviously we celebrate it, but it's an expectation. You'd be surprised if they didn't win it. So all that the guy's got available to be successful is to somehow win this tournament. And you won't have seen this from where you were, but when he collected his winner's medal, it was on his neck for about four seconds.
He pulled it off as if like they wanted. We saw it on the big screen. Yeah, he yanked it off, and it was just like, oh, another one of these kind of things.
And I mean, there's two ways of looking at that. And my first reaction was, you know, come on, mate, keep it on your neck. Be proud of you know your season. But you know, they've provided some great performances along the way in this Champions League, and they've played a great part, both attackingly as well as from a defensive point of view. The other way of looking at it is maybe saying, do you know what, losing this isn't good enough. I've lost this tournament twice now. It isn't good enough. I'm not happy. I'm going to put this in my pocket. I'm going to try again.
Yeah.
But what did he do? I mean, look, Bonucci and Chiellini are going to be the centrepiece of the back line again. Azali's 36 now, and today he looked every day a 36-year-old. Yeah. So I think he's going to keep the three at the back. Maybe he looks at bringing the centre off there. Dani Alves, you know, I think I don't see many players moving on. He needs to somehow find someone to bring in. Serie A, obviously, Juventus will have to pick a Serie A as you'd expect. There are a lot of younger players in Serie A, a lot more compared to recent years, and I think he needs to somehow freshen up. I think in a central midfield post, though, because the defence have had a bad game tonight, but I'm not going to write them off based on what they've done this season. They've got goals up front in three different players, all right, with varied amounts, but Higuain's got 32 goals this season. He's going to score next year. But central midfield area, you know, with Kadira, Pjanic, yeah, they're good players, but they're not good enough to win this tournament, I don't think. So that's somewhere he needs to find something, find a different way of playing to utilise them a lot more, get his midfielders on the ball. I think one point about midfielders, I was surprised that you could see after about 50 minutes the game was getting away from Juventus before the two goals, and I thought Marchisio should have been on the field before the goals went in. He should have preempted the trouble. Marchisio is very industrious, he's a very clever player, and I think he'd have had a bit more energy in there. Would it have made any difference? Probably not, Bell, but I was a bit surprised by that. He made a couple of tactical mistakes today, and then he was brutally punished, and that's what happens at this level.
Yeah. And speaking of mistakes, Cuadrado, I didn't see that incident too much, to be fair, because unfortunately there was one of these, you know, metal guardrails in front of me blocking my vision when into the, it looked as if he took a swipe at him, but from what I understand, Sergio Ramos went down like a sack of spuds for no reason.
Yeah, and to be fair, this is, you're going to start me off a little bit here, to be honest, because
no, go ahead.
I'm not in the Sergio Ramos fan club. He's a player I don't like. I respect his ability. I respect his ability to defend, attack. He's one of the all-time European great defenders. But I've always found him a classless individual. And all right, you could say it's professional to leave nothing to chance. But what happened, for the benefit of anyone else who was stuck behind a railing, he's put in a really aggressive challenge, and he's won the ball, so no complaints there. And a good thing he did win the ball, he was on the booking himself, but it was a robust challenge, and there was a coming together, isn't it, an exaggeration, between the two, where Cuadrado sort of brushed him and trod on his toe in the process.
Right.
And then he went down holding his face. He was holding his face, rolling, and the linesman was you know, the linesman was stood next to him, and he allowed the ref to brandish second yellow card. Why it started me off is Ramos. There was in the Euro 2012 final, Spain beat Italy. They thrashed Italy 4-0, record score for an international final, a European final rather. So it was a very one-sided game in the end. Well, to be fair, it was a game that was even, and then went away from Italy. But what happened in that game was Italy went down to 10 men, having lost a player for injury, and they'd made all their subs. Then Spain scored a couple of late goals. So it was 4-0 with like 85 minutes gone, Italy got 10 on the pitch and they're beaten. And I'm looking at that as a fellow pro, and I'm thinking, show a little bit of class. Instead, you've got Ramos. He's a centre-half. He's up in the opposition box. First, he's tried to score a back heel, and then he dived in the box in that situation. And I'm thinking, today was a similar situation where there's no need to do what he did at that spot. The game was over. All right, Juventus had, to be fair, recently just flashed a header just wide, which might have set up a nerve 10 minutes. So maybe he's doing his job of seeing the game out. But to get another player sent off in a European final, that's never going to sit comfortably with me. Never, ever going to sit comfortably with me. And I don't know why you need to do it.
The guy's got form. And as you said, he's a superb footballer. I mean, I think he's got more goals than Wayne Rooney this season. That just says it all, really. He's got a lot of important goals. I mean, that one in the Champions League final occurred a few years ago against Atletico Madrid, last minute. He's a great player to have, but as you said, the histrionics, the attitude, that's the thing that lets him down, you know, because, let's be honest, as you said, fantastic footballer. To get out of his game, is he the same player? Probably. I don't see why he does it. And he's an older individual as well, so he should really know better. I don't feel sorry for Cuadrado, to be honest, because... Yeah, fair enough. He was minor, and he stepped on him. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe it wasn't. But the way that he behaved afterwards, in the sense that he went for him. Now, obviously, it's a Champions League final. Heat of the moment kind of thing. But even still, there's no need to react like that. You know, he's done it to get you sent off. Why make matters even worse? For all we know, UEFA might throw the book at him for that.
I think, first of all, Cuadrado, he was on the field for 18 minutes, by the way. And during those 18 minutes, he was awful, absolutely awful. He was obviously brought on to try and drive Juventus forward with his pace. And looking at the bench, they didn't have much speed on the bench, and that was where they were struggling.
Yeah.
He was getting a lot of the ball in a short amount of time. He was overhitting crosses. He wasn't driving into areas. He was very, very poor. I think, sometimes I think maybe the frustration of a big stage, you come off the bench, the game's slipping away, you put in a bad performance. Maybe that's driven that decision, I'm not sure. But it's like, when people say it's silly he's given the ref a decision to make. I don't normally like hearing things like that because I still expect, particularly the linesman that's got to do his job. We were talking on Sports News podcast a couple of weeks ago about the new retrospective diving punishment that they're going to bring in the Premier League next year. And when you see things like that happen today, first of all, you wonder why has the Lions allowed it to get to this point? And then second of all, is anything going to be done about it? Because essentially, but this sounds really dramatic, but at the end of the game, Ramos, he's brought his two kids on the pitch who have just watched him play football, and their dad's contribution to that football match today was to roll on the floor and get another player sent off.
Yeah.
And that can't sit right. Incidentally, in the celebrations, one of his kids sort of clashed heads with Ramos. I'm surprised he stayed up after that. But he managed, which was a relief for everyone. But yeah, it's disappointing with a player as decorated as Sergio Ramos. But he doesn't change the result. It doesn't change the fact that Real Madrid were dominant, even with the defensive second goal, which was freakish. But it's just a shame that he felt the need to tarnish himself a little bit there.
Well, look, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo got the Man of the Match award, which wasn't really a surprise given he scored twice. Who was your man of the match, though? Because for me, I think Isco was absolutely fantastic. I think his movement off the ball, when he was on it, he wasn't afraid to take on players. He allowed Ronaldo to be that outlet. He was a different class, and it shows how much he's improved under Zidane and the confidence that he's given him. Who was your man of the match, mate?
Yeah, I think Isco... a special mention, and in the last year he's come on leaps and bounds. Even the last half of this year,
yep.
We've always known he's a good player, a lot of competition for places there, and he made that he's made that number 10 berth, if you like, his own now, hasn't he?
Yep.
And he was brilliant. Luka Modric was absolutely fantastic. I've always said Luka Modric is the greatest player I've seen at Tottenham in my lifetime. And in the first of these three finals that Real Madrid won, the one against Atletico Madrid, I'll stretch the time, I always said to people, if you watch that final, you watch Gareth Bale's performance, Gareth Bale scored the crucial second goal that day, and you watch Luka Modric's performance, you will understand why I rate him that highly.
Yep.
And he controlled midfield to the point where in that second half, Juventus could not do anything but lump a long ball over the top and watch it come back again. And the other contender, there's a lot of players I'm nominating it, but the other contender was Marcelo, and he was brilliant in that 2014 final as well. But Marcelo, in the second half, when he was allowed to attack a lot more, he caused the Juventus all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
Pulled defenders out wide, got behind people, almost easy. It looked like he was jogging, and his decision making with the cutbacks and the timing of his passes. He's a contender as well. I think Ronaldo's been given it because he scored two goals. Yeah. Ironically, he probably didn't have the most eventful game of his career, to be fair.
That's right.
His first touch was the goal that got deflected. He didn't really get involved in the first half. And then in the second half, he was quietish by his standards. But then that's what happens with Cristiano Ronaldo. You know what you get. He doesn't need to play for 90 minutes. He is quicker, sharper, more powerful than any player in the world. I don't, whether I think Messi is better or not is irrelevant. The fact is, he is the most powerful athlete the game had today, possibly has ever seen. And the second goal he scored, which ultimately decided the game, is just his desire, reading the situation, to get to that near post quicker than everyone else.
Yep.
And that's what's done it for him, and that's what's changed the game. So if he's been given the Man of the Match award, then I suppose you've got to say fair enough, haven't you?
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned Marcelo there. I remember when he first joined Real Madrid, the first few months he was very, very ropey. One of the weak links, so to speak. But again, he's come on leaps and bounds. And again, it must be the Zidane factor, because I don't remember Marcelo being this confident on the ball and this reliable under different managers. It must be Zidane, must be, surely.
Yeah, I mean, you think he's Zidane as well. You've only got to go back a year and a half ago where people were saying that actually he wasn't cut out to be a manager, and he started his Real Madrid tenure not particularly strongly, and he was getting some bad results. And he went on that run where, I can't remember how many games it was, to be honest, but I think they won 16 or 17 games in a row in all competitions, and things started to turn for him. What you're seeing with Zidane, which you didn't see with Mourinho, for example, or Del Bosque, is the fullbacks get a lot further forward than they used to. It's more a traditional Real Madrid side.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, you know, Roberto Carlos, you know, he'd be more of a left winger than a left back. And I think Marcelo, he's playing very much a modern fullback role. And obviously Zidane's giving him the freedom to do that. I think with Marcelo, because I wasn't his biggest fan either when he started. I remember thinking he was overrated. And he scored an absolute worldie against Tottenham in the Champions League about 5 minutes after I was slagging him off, which is typical. But the 2014 Champions League final, which I've mentioned a few times tonight, Marcelo was the difference between the fire, especially entering the extra time period. And I think his confidence has grown. They're winning European trophies. Now they've won a Liga. Barcelona have been the dominant force in Spanish football, the team who everyone has raved about worldwide. And I think overcoming that, picking up Champions League trophies, a lot of players' confidence has grown. You know, you're supposed to hit your prime when you're 28, 27. Marcelo, he's 29 now, so he's in that zone. And Zidane's got that team very well balanced. They defend better than Barcelona. Their central midfielders are better than Barcelona's now, given obviously Xavi and Iniesta have either retired or I think you're looking at a side who feel like they're returning to the top of European football again. And three trophies in 4 years, you can't argue with that. And even the great Barcelona side, the mighty Barcelona, they only managed 3 in 6 years. So you look at that and you can see a lot of players who are just oozing confidence, playing the best football of their careers. And Marcelo's one of them. Ronaldo speaks for himself. Luka Modric gets better with age. Ramos, as we've said, is solid. I mean, if you compare Ramos to the Barcelona centre half, it really is no contest. And I think obviously Zidane now he's come up smelling the roses again. He's winning it as a player. He's won it back to back. First and team to retain the title for 26 years in Europe. And they can't do any wrong. They can't do any wrong at the moment.
So, when you look at this current crop at Real Madrid, and I'm thinking of from a Man United supporter's perspective here, because obviously David De Gea is linked with Real Madrid again. Why would they need a new goalkeeper when they've just won back-to-back Champions Leagues? And secondly, can you see them bringing in more big names in the summer?
I can. Because first of all, this is what Real Madrid do. There's one marquee signing almost every summer. It normally comes from the Premier League. If you look at their team, it's hard to find a weakness. If you have to pick one, you'd probably pick the goalkeeper. And David is one of the best in the world. I expect him to strengthen as well, though. If you look at, obviously, Manchester United, besides Alex Ferguson, had every time he had a good side, he strengthened. They strengthened when they won the league. When they didn't win the league, they almost kept their sides. But once they'd won, they kept it fresh. And that's how that's one of the reasons how Alex Ferguson stayed interested for so long and won title after title after title. He kept strengthening when you thought it wasn't possible to strengthen. So I expect Real Madrid to bring players in. I imagine they'll be linked with Eden Hazard, whether maybe. If Pep Guardiola doesn't fancy Aguero, I'm sure they'd look to bring him in for a year or two. Benzema is a player who is a very good player, but you could find better centre forward in the world if you were really looking. And this is what Real Madrid want. Real Madrid wants the best player in every position that there is. And they've got unlimited budget. They've got unlimited lure. They can attract whoever they want. And I expect them to exercise that. And if it is De Gea, it wouldn't surprise me if they could send Hazard to go in there. I'm not sure where he'd fit in, to be honest. Looking at the way Isco plays, you know. But you look at their side, Stel. And you think not only they got unlimited resources, but they could sell Morata, they could sell Benzema, and before you know it, they've got an £80 million war chest just in them two transfers alone, where they can bring in a marquee player with a next spender next to zero. So I think they'll strengthen again in the transfer market. And would you, after that second half display, would you back against them winning it next year? Difficult.
No, you're hitting the nail right on the head there, mate. You look at that team from front to back. I mean, even players like Casemiro were absolutely fantastic. I remember watching him in last season's final. And I was saying to my brother-in-law, like, this guy's a real deal. He goes about his business quietly, but he's a very, very effective footballer. And what he does, he protects the back four so well that it allows your Toni Kroos's, your Luka Modric's, your Isco's to get forward, because he gives that back four that security. You know, players like, as you mentioned, Benzema, Morata, even James Rodriguez, even Gareth Bale, they can afford to get rid of them and still strengthen. And it's very worrying to see what they can possibly do. Do you know what I mean? It's very worrying to see that there's a chance that they can actually dominate Europe. And we're talking about like three in a row now. Three in a row. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, obviously, they won 5 or 6 in a row in the 60s, and they won 3 and 5 in the early 2000s, or from 1998 through to 2002. They've got a history of building sides that last.
Yeah.
You look at and I just think they went through that really, really weird lull where between 2002 and 2009, maybe 2010, they lost in the second round 6 or 7 years in a row. similar to Arsenal, ironically. Although they probably didn't get as much speak for it, in fairness to them. And when Mourinho went there, he was the first guy then to get them back into winning knockout games. I mean, they were losing sort of like to Lyon back to back. They've endured that tough spell. Then they've had to sit and watch Barcelona come out. They wouldn't have endured that. They've had to change their style to compete with Barcelona. You know, you saw them play a lot more cynical style of football, which you wouldn't really associate with them. And now you're almost seeing the return of the giant playing the way they want to play, having first dibs on the players, signing the best players in the world available to them. And yeah, it is scary, especially with the Premier League being so far behind. We might get a glimpse of, I know Community Shield, European Super Cups generally aren't a benchmark, but obviously Man United will get to play Real Madrid in the Super Cup now, which is a pretty mouthwatering tie, probably, for Man United, because they've not had a big European tie for a few seasons now. So I look forward to that. But that might be a marker as to how far the Premier League behind again.
Yeah,
and if Real Madrid were to attract De Gea or Hazard, you know, it's a big kick in the teeth for the Premier League again.
Yeah, that's right. As we mentioned, Real Madrid, there's a chance that they can go on to dominate as they did back in the day. The only thing is, do you think Zidane is tactically astute to change the system? And the reason why I ask this is because eventually he's going to get found out with this system that he's been playing. He's been playing the same system for the past couple seasons. He's been at Roma. He hasn't really chopped and changed much in terms of a tactical sense. Do you think he's got more in his locker to actually say, right, you know, if there's a game that I'm chasing, I'm going to play a certain system. If there's a game that I need to keep it tight, I'm going to change it this way. Because let's be honest, winning the Champions League is great. Winning it back-to-back is fantastic. Because as they say, winning it is difficult, but it's even more difficult to retain it. Now they've got a massive bullseye on their heads. As I said, is he good enough? Do you think he's tactically good enough to change the system and keep it fresh?
I think there's no evidence of that right now to draw upon. And that's maybe because he hasn't had to do it. I mean, the thing I'll say in his favour is, as a footballer, there were very few more intelligent. And I know it doesn't always transfer, but you know, there's a fair chance it will. In terms of understanding what it takes at a top level, he's got that. And as we mentioned previously, he's clearly transferred some of that to some of his players. So he's transferred the way some individual players play from one season to the next. Whether he can do it in season as he needs to, I mean, it's going to remain to be seen. So whereas, like, Mourinho will look at a situation and he'll say, do you know what, today we're playing with seven at the back because that's what we need to do to win this game. I guess we're only going to find out. But the thing in his favour is he's not ever going to play. He's not going to play a team next season to attack better than him. So he's not really going to nullify teams. I think what you might find with the balls on the head, and you know, you mentioned it, you might find teams playing a lot more cynically against them. So a lot of people expected Juventus to be a lot deeper and tighter today to try and frustrate them. That didn't really happen. So if that happens, is he going to find another way of breaking teams down? Is he going to change the attacking players that way? And I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But the only other thing in his favour, I'd say, is he did have that bad spell at the beginning of his career at Real Madrid. And he was losing games to teams you wouldn't expect him to lose to. And he managed to find a way to switch that around. Went on an extraordinary run. Didn't miss out on much for the title last season. He's won it this season comfortably in the points total would suggest. And he's picked up two European trophies. So now, you know, we can look for reasons to criticise him, but I think we're gonna have to wait before we get the opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. Well, Dan, look, I don't know what else to ask you, to be honest.
I think the only thing to leave it on, it'd be sad really to not give Gianluigi Buffon a shout out, because I wanted him to win so badly. For him, for the loyalty he's shown the club, he epitomises everything about Juventus' return from the doldrums. You know, he went down with them to Serie B. He's the last man standing from that particular team. And a victory in the European Cup today would have represented a great end to his career. and the representative return to the top of European football for Juventus, and he's missed out. And the nature of a couple of the goals that beat him, it's hard not to feel for him.
Yeah.
And you feel when you watch Real Madrid and things like that, that if they lose, yeah, okay, their fans won't be happy. But you know, they'll get another time soon. At the moment, you look at Juventus and, you know, 2 finals in 3 years, it's going to be difficult for them to rebuild in the next couple of years to challenge again. But in terms of Gianluigi Buffon at 39, I think that's probably it for him now. And that's probably why the night has to end on a sad note for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for me, I've had this discussion with people before. I went on Chris's YouTube show, the Goon Eagle Eye, which Harry was on the other day. And I said to him, Buffon is still the number one in the world at the moment. He's better than De Gea, he's better than Neuer. And a lot of people disagree with me, but at the end of the day, he reached the Champions League final. He didn't concede a goal in open play in the knockout round. I think it was only Monaco. I think he only conceded one goal, wasn't it? One goal he conceded in the knockout round, and none of them were from open play or something like that. So, you know, he's been a fantastic goalkeeper. He's been a fantastic servant to Juventus. He's been there what? How many years now? Since 95, wasn't it? Was it 95 he joined them?
No, he's been there since 2000, 2001.
2000.
He was part of the team that won the UEFA Cup in 95, and he was there a couple of years. And Cannavaro was at the back, and had an unbelievable team. I'm sad what happened to them. And I think he moved to Juventus just after the turn of the century, and he's been there. You know, he's been there for 16 years. He won Serie B with them. He won obviously countless Serie A's, and he's lost 3 European finals now. And he's a top bloke. In fact, to sort of flip it a bit, going back to where we were talking about Real Madrid replacing a goalkeeper, I mean, I don't think this will happen at all, but would you begrudge him now if he looked at it in his 40th year and said, you know what, I'm gonna go abroad for one season, only go and join Real Madrid and try and add that elusive piece of silverware? You know, I don't think it would happen, but I don't think many would begrudge him that opportunity, because he's a good enough keeper still to play anywhere, and he deserves to do what he needs to add that trophy to his cabinet.
It wouldn't surprise me if he ended his career at Parma, you know?
Parma have got to do a little bit of work. I mean,
yeah,
I know he's a very, very, very loyal bloke, Gianluigi Buffon, and he's a top bloke as well. He's had a lot of mental health issues over his life that not many people are aware of. It's not widely publicised. He had bouts of depression, like suicidal at times. So I think he liked his comfort, and he liked his family. I think that's why I'd be surprised to see him around Madrid. With Palmer, if you look at it though, if he feels, I take your point, if he feels that he doesn't want to retire, because, you know, the football of his life, it clearly is, and playing football at any level is all that matters to him, then why not? But obviously Parma, they've got promoted from Serie D1. The structure in Italy is a bit weird, so you get regions of Serie D and regions of Serie C. So it'd be a good 2, 3, 4 years before they're close to challenging for Serie B, and that's if they're able to rebuild their side. Obviously they're still completely bereft of money and there's no investors in the club, so, you know, if he wanted to play and just, you know, play into his 40s and 50s, then he could obviously do it at that level. But I reckon, really, I can see Gianluigi Buffon staying at Juventus and in the next World Cup for Italy. And then I think he'll probably clean up his gloves, having lost in an agonising penalty shootout to see. It'll be a sad day for football. But, heartbroken for him, really, that he lost them. He's lost another major final.
And the thing is, to be fair, he didn't have a chance with any other goals, did he? Didn't have a chance.
No, not really. I mean, the first time I saw the second goal, I looked at it and I couldn't quite understand what had happened. And when you see it back, it's deflected, and the spin on the ball has taken it outside of the goal and curled back in. He got no chance with the third or the fourth, and the first one, I think he would have saved it, but it deflected off of Bonucci into the corner. So again, that's the life of a goalkeeper. You know, he'll part of the goalkeeper's job will be to organise that defence in front of him. Everyone calls him a solid back four, and that defence was that defence was a little bit sluggish for a couple of goals, uncharacteristically, particularly Ronaldo's one. Like, Bonucci cuts them out. He cuts them out 95 times out of 100. They were just a second too late. How much of that was to do with, you know, Buffon's part of that defence? Maybe you know, the commands weren't right. He didn't have his angles right for his defence. A lot of it, as I said, was to do with Bazzali being pulled out wide. But, you know, he'll know more than most UK fans of the game. Sometimes, as a goalkeeper, you just gotta watch balls fly in the back of your net, and you know, you can't do much to stop. You know, if you could stop every goal, football would be a very boring sport. So, I think, you know, the cameras were all on him at the end, as you'd expect, and you know, it wasn't because he, you know, he'll feel hard done by today for goals on the European stage. That'll hurt him, but. You know, there's no glaring errors there, and you know, he doesn't make many mistakes. Even at the age of 39, he doesn't make many mistakes. And it'd be nice if he could somehow, whether it's somewhere else, win this tournament, because he deserves it.
Yeah, the thing is, I've always had this in my mind that Juventus will sign Donnarumma and keep Buffon there for a couple more seasons and kind of groom him to be the replacement. Because I've always said that, you know, since I've seen Donnarumma in goal, he's like Buffon Mark II, but a bit taller.
Yeah, it would make sense. And the thing in the top of the Italian league, he moves from players between the big clubs.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon. So like, you know, like Baggio played for Juventus, Inter Milan and Milan, so yeah. The three biggest clubs. Ronaldo played for both Milan clubs, so did Ibrahimovic, so did Andrea Pirlo. So the prospect of Juventus cherry picking a goalkeeper from Milan is not unheard of, and he's a natural successor. I mean, if you're a young goalkeeper, you want to follow in the footsteps of you want to be the man who replaces the man. So it's similar to, like, you know, when you see sides like it doesn't really matter who it is, like, let's pick Tottenham because I support them. Like, for years you're not really linked with them many good players, but then suddenly you'll have a good left back called Danny Rose. Suddenly, Danny Rose, when he leaves, you'll find a lot of other good left backs will be linked as a replacement. Whereas 5 years ago, you wouldn't have thought. So, like Luke Shaw, you'd probably think, well, if Luke Shaw doesn't work out for Man United, you'd say Tottenham. Whereas 5 years ago, you would have done that. So, you do find players trying to replace like as much as possible.
Yeah.
And obviously, Donnarumma is going to end up being Italy's number one. You can see that already. So, it makes sense. And yeah, they could sign him. Obviously, Milan going into obviously they've got Chinese owners, which is, you never know how that's going to work out for a football club. But there's a bit more money in the club, so whether they want to sell to their rivals or they want to try, and they've got a lot of work to do as well to get back into the top three or four clubs in Italy. So selling their goalkeeper wouldn't be a popular move, but you know, if the money's right, as we know, it'll be off. So. The future for Italian goalkeeping has still got a bit of legs to run once the great man retires. But obviously, if Juventus don't sign Donnarumma, they're going to have to start scouring Europe for someone to yeah. fill them big gloves.
Well, there's a big rumour that Chesney could come in. I mean, I don't know how much truth there is in that, but there's a Twitter account called Football Italia. And they reckon that Chesney could be the replacement, which would baffle me because I don't think he's a reliable goalkeeper anyway.
Yeah, I don't like. I've never liked Chesney as a goalkeeper. I don't like players whose egos are bigger than their talent for a start. He has improved since leaving Arsenal a bit, and. Some of that will be to do with, you know, the pace they're going to play that possibly. So he's not as erratic as he used to be. So against Arsenal, if you watch six Arsenal games, every sixth game he'll come running out of his box like a lunatic and cost his team a goal. He seems to have cut out of his game. You know, it's hard to forget how bad he was at Arsenal. He's done okay at Roma, don't get me wrong, but I'd be surprised if Juventus aren't going to look elsewhere and try and find something a little bit better. You're talking about, we're not just talking about Gianluigi Buffon here, we're talking about a club, Juventus, who has a rich history of unbelievable goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Not good goalkeepers. But I mean, I know Alex Maniger got a few games. He's their reserve goalkeeper bit, which is a bit of an anomaly. But you're talking about some of the best goalkeepers to have ever played the game. I mean, like, you know, Buffon essentially replaced Peruzzi, right? There's a couple of years in between or whatever. And you go back to the likes of Zoff, you know, these are top goalkeepers who are playing for this club. So, you know, they'll be similar to, like, you know, if things are a bit backwards in Italy, over here you've got, like, Man United have got another, you know, it's a famous number 7. Some teams have a famous number 10. In Italy, you know, it's famous number 5, famous number 3s, and famous number 1.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But the number 1 jersey at Juventus would be something held in the highest possible esteem. So, I'd be expecting them to do a bit better in the transfer market than the likes of Chesney. But, yeah, it remains to be seen.
Yeah. And on a final note, mate, I mean, obviously, we don't want to end it on a sour note. Juventus, they still are the biggest team in Italy, aren't they? Forget tonight's result. Obviously, they've won six Serie A in a row. We know that Milan, obviously, up and coming again. You know, it's like a sleeping giant. Inter the same. But Juve, they'll dominate for a few more years, won't they? At least.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, it's hard to remember rightly this moment in time. But at half-time tonight, you would have looked at that and thought, you know, Juventus can win this. So, for all intents and purposes, that they were 45 minutes from completing a treble.
Yeah.
Which would have been the first in their history, and there's not many trebles in European football that take place. So you're talking about a great side here. We said they're probably going to keep hold of Allegri, so that's a positive, because he can continue that work. They've not got the youngest squad, so they need to freshen up, but they will have their pick of talent in Serie A. And I think what will do Juventus good as well is a couple of the teams beneath them, like you said, are getting better. So, you know, Roma have got a good side. They're pushing quite close. Napoli have got a good side. Inter Milan are terrible, but there's new investors. And what Serie A needs is to have four or five clubs challenging in a similar way to the Premier League, or four or five clubs capable of challenging again. And that brings the best. That brings the best out of teams. Similar to like Real Madrid, obviously Barcelona were brilliant, Atletico Madrid got involved, and Real Madrid have had to raise their game, and they've done that. So I think Juventus will be, you know, you'd be expecting them to win the title next year. And, you know, they'll come again in the Champions League next year as well, and they'll be difficult. Similar to the fact that we're saying Real Madrid are going to strengthen. So I think, you know, when you get to two European finals in 3 years, players want to join you, and that's a good thing for Juventus. And Serie A hasn't recovered yet, but it's slowly getting there. And you know, if you're looking at continued progress, you're looking at a team that have made two European finals in 3 years, and despite having their best players ripped away from the first year, they've replaced those, and arguably they've got battered tonight ultimately, but their side is a lot more better and rounded. So yeah, Juventus, once they've licked their wounds, they'll reflect on another very good season, and they can look forward to next year.
Excellent, wonderful. Well, Dan, thank you ever so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. Before I let you go, do you want to give our listeners your Twitter handle?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is BDL_SSM. And I created a new Twitter account a month ago, so struggling for followers at the moment. So yeah, any help with that, if you want to read my angry tweets, would be appreciated.
There you go. And you're representing Sofa Sports News. What's the Twitter handle for that one? I keep forgetting. I'm so rude.
Yeah, so it's at Sofa Sports News _.
Excellent, wonderful.
So
Brilliant.
There's an underscore at the end of Sofa Sports News, which causes some confusion sometimes when I retweet some of my stuff, and some poor in probably a furniture shop he's getting all my tweets about hooliganism. But Yeah, we're doing a pod with an interview with Jonas Glaver tomorrow, who's a European journalist, where we're going to cover the Champions League final again.
Yeah, Jonas is a very, very good guy. He knows his stuff. We had him on a few weeks ago. A really good guy. So you'll get a lot out of him. You'll enjoy that one.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, guys, you can give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. Follow our friends over the FNX Network at FNX Network. Our sponsors at MySportswear1. And that's it for us. We're going to be back on Tuesday. So tune in then. On the night where Cristiano Ronaldo ultimately probably sealed his Ballon d'Or fate, so to speak, with two goals in another Cardiff final. He did it for United in 2004 against Millwall, and I think 2006 against Wigan, he got two there. So that's it from us. We'll be back very soon. Take care.